from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
It was just, looked like an avalanche rumble and everything was all over. Just coming out, shooting out from where it crashed.
Aerial application is our weapon of last resort, and I think we have an excellent chance of it working.
I'm very optimistic that in the very near future we're going to be resuming the baseball season.
I have done nothing wrong.
What we need now is tax reduction for everybody.
From ABC News, the people and stories that made this week's World News. At 7 p.m. Friday evening, the lobby of the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Kansas City was filled with the sounds of big band music and a happy crowd of more than 2,000 people. At 7.02 p.m., the scene was one of disaster. Eyewitness Julie Thomas tells what she saw.
I heard some rumble, and I turned around, and I looked up as the second balcony fell onto the top, and then after that, everybody just started rushing towards the door, and looking back, it was just... looked like an avalanche rumble and everything was all over, just coming out, shooting out from where it crashed.
There were many people on the two catwalks spanning the lobby when they fell. These survivors described the scene.
We saw the people falling down.
We were lucky we didn't get hurt with flying glass, because when it fell, the glass started flying. And a lot of people got cut by flying glass.
And all the people that were on the bottom that were standing watching
sure,
the dance.
That catwalk. They're not here no more.
Cranes and bulldozers were brought in to tear out the front of a year-old hotel and lift the huge blocks of concrete and steel beams from the lobby floor. Some people were found alive in the rubble, but at least 111 people had died. Kansas City Mayor Richard Berkley came to the scene.
It's one of the saddest nights of my life, but I have seen men and women working in a way that is just unbelievable in saving lives and reducing the amount of physical pain and the emergency work, the firefighters, the police, the Red Cross, the ambulance service, everybody has just done an absolutely sensational job.
One of the rescue workers was Vincent Osborne, a fireman visiting Kansas City from Hayes, Kansas. Osborne was with his wife, a nurse, when the collapse occurred.
Our first concern was for our children. Once we got them, we went back in, but it was just so massive of the tragedy that was, you know, you could just help a few and the rest were, they needed cranes, and they're just, you know, it's unbelievable.
Engineers must now try to figure out why the first walkway gave way. But Mayor Berkley says it's already obvious to him that there was a fault in construction somewhere.
There's no reason for a collapse like that in a virtually a brand new building. So there's something wrong, but I think our purpose now is not to place any blame. That is the type of, we'll take a thorough investigation in a timely way so that it's judged and we don't prejudge who's at fault at this point.
The Hyatt Regency is now closed. Its guests have been moved to other Kansas City hotels. The war against the Mediterranean fruit fly continued this week in California, but the predictions for its success were mixed. Jerry Scribner is head of the MedFly Eradication Program.
There's no question that the program of the last 8 months did not succeed. There's no question that at this point that we have no alternative. We cannot beat this thing on the ground. Aerial application is our weapon of last resort, and I think we have an excellent chance of it working, but that depends on getting the applications on.
A helicopter started spraying the insecticide malathion before dawn on Tuesday, but only covered a few of the 175 square miles where the infestation is heaviest. Scribner was not discouraged.
It takes time to get pilots, helicopters, nozzles, and bases, and everything else. I mean, even in war, it takes time to build your forces up and apply them to the task, and I think we're doing okay.
Scribner's optimism was apparently justified. By week's end, five helicopters were in the air, and it looked like all the acreage would get its first spraying on schedule. However, all week there were new finds of the medfly, and some feared the aerial spraying was too late to prevent the pest spread to San Francisco and the rich farmlands of the San Joaquin Valley. California Governor Jerry Brown had initially refused to allow the aerial spraying of malathion because of fears for its effects on human health. But Dr. John McGrary of the Orange County, Florida Health Department says they've used malathion for a long time to kill mosquitoes with no bad side effects.
It's been used as a fogger with fogging machines for mosquitoes, with children actually riding bicycles through it on streets at night, and I know of no cases where it's been used in its proper formulation where anybody has been harmed.
Stanford University Dr. Kenneth Melman agreed.
The data really speaks for this being an unusually safe drug. Much safer, I might add, than would be expected of diesel exhaust fumes from an ordinary American car.
Palo Alto resident Jeannie Rodriguez was not reassured.
I don't want to have to apologize to my daughter, who's 3 months old, 20 years down the line, and say, I'm sorry, all your children are going to be deformed because I didn't fight this. I didn't know, so I just went along blind.
Many residents of the target areas have spent their nights in motels and shelters outside the area. The director of the MedFly project, Jerry Scribner, thinks they're carrying concern a bit too far.
They don't leave their homes when their neighbor sprays a whole bottle of Malathion on the next door yard. I don't think there's any health reason to leave.
John Weld and his wife stayed home, but that didn't mean he wasn't worried.
We don't know who or what to believe. The conventional wisdom is that it's safe, it's used widely in parks and that type of thing, in veterinary offices, and that's a harmless chemical you find, used around the house, that type of thing. On the other hand, you read professors at Stanford who are concerned about the long-term effects. Possibly it's mutagenic, inducing damage to the genes. You simply don't know.
In addition to the aerial spraying, the stripping of fruit trees and ground spraying continues. Members of the California Conservation Corps are helping with that, and some of them were worried about working in areas where the Malathion had been sprayed. Corps Director B.T. Collins decided to put their fears to rest by drinking a glass of Malathion, diluted to spray strength.
Tastes terrible. Tastes like kerosene. But I just wanted to let the kids know that I wouldn't put them in an area that was unsafe. And they were very concerned about all the publicity of the aerial spray.
California is also confiscating any fruits and vegetables people try to take out of the quarantine area to prevent a further spread of the medfly infestation. But other states are worried some produce may slip through, so they've set up restrictions on California products. Oklahoma Agriculture Commissioner Jack Craig.
This will be an emergency quarantine. The Oklahoma Board of Agriculture does hereby promulgate this emergency regulation and quarantine the introduction into Oklahoma of the Mediterranean fruit fly.
North Carolina Agriculture Commissioner Jim Graham said everyone has to be worried about the fly.
North Carolina supermarkets and wholesalers receive thousands of tons of California fruit and vegetables each week. And all it would take is one truckload of infested fruit in the right place, and North Carolina fruit and vegetable crops would have the same problem.
California has already spent over $23 million to fight the medfly, and $4.2 million in crop losses in the quarantine area have been reported. California Governor Jerry Brown has asked President Reagan to declare the state a federal disaster area.
It is a national issue, and while we do our utmost, we want to be joined in that effort by President Reagan and by his deputies and assistants and his money.
Crying shame. Summer can be a bummer without a baseball game.
Baseball fans are spending more time around the house these days, according to a poll taken during the fifth week of the baseball strike. Federal mediator Ken Moffitt was the only person who seemed upbeat about the chances of ending the strike.
I'm very optimistic that in the very near future, we're going to be resuming the baseball season.
U.S. Labor Secretary Raymond Donovan went to New York Wednesday to meet briefly with both sides in the talks. And afterwards, Donovan said,
we're excited about the fact that they're back talking in a very serious way. Collective bargaining is the key to this process, as it is with any of these disputes. And the fact that they're back in serious, and I mean serious negotiations, I think the country should be encouraged.
However, Donovan also said he would like the talks moved to Washington if some progress wasn't made soon, and Thursday night he made good on his threat. The Reagan administration can't order the end to the strike because it does not involve the nation's health and welfare. But Donovan told negotiators in a Friday session that failure to resolve the strike would be a kick in the teeth to the American people. Donovan also reminded both sides of the millions of angry fans they'll have to face should the rest of the baseball season be canceled. And according to that poll we mentioned earlier, many of those fans already think the image of baseball has been hurt by the strike. It seems the CIA is having trouble refurbishing its image with the American public. Just when it was beginning to emerge from the cloud created by its activities during the Vietnam War and the Nixon era, some of its top officials have come under attack. Deputy Director of Covert Operations Max Hugel was forced to resign after two former business associates charged he'd been involved in improper stock market manipulations in the mid-1970s. Hugel defended himself.
I deny the allegations of wrongdoing. If that's not clear enough, let me say it again. I have done nothing wrong.
Hugel had been selected for his position despite a lack of intelligence gathering experience by CIA Director William Casey. And Casey himself came under scrutiny this week when it was revealed that a New Orleans judge had once ruled against him in connection with a failed agribusiness firm with which he had once been involved. Senator Paul Laxalt says he continues to support Casey.
I'm not privy to the facts at this point, but Bill Casey has been a very, very loyal supporter of the president's, performed a very valuable service during the course of that campaign. So far as I know, has been doing an excellent job at CIA. Apparently, we have a court decision now to the effect that would create some kind of cloud, but it's purely a trial court decision to be submitted on appeal.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has asked its staff to look into the matters concerning Casey's financial dealings, his appointment of Hugel, and some recent news stories about CIA activities. President Reagan says Casey continues to have his full confidence and full trust. The FBI has arrested another American and charged him with spying for the Soviet Union. Former Army Warrant Officer Joseph Helmick was arrested in Jacksonville, Florida. The indictment against him alleges he was paid $131,000 in 1963 and 1964 for passing top-secret information to the Soviets. FBI spokesman Lawrence Lawler explained.
The information which he gave them consisted of a repair and maintenance manual for a code machine, the details of the internal workings of the code machine, and also codes which were used to set the machine. It is a type of machine that's used for teletype encoding teletype transmissions. The items that he gave were classified as confidential, secret, and top secret.
In Atlanta, a grand jury returned a two-count indictment against Wayne Williams. Williams is charged with the murders of 27-year-old Nathaniel Cater and 21-year-old Jimmy Ray Payne, two of the victims in the long string of murders of young people in that city. On Capitol Hill this week, arguments over the proper form of any tax-cutting legislation continued. Congressman Jack Kemp, co-author of the administration's favorite bill, says it's time to change the tax structure.
We tax work and employment and thrift and savings and investment and success and production and output and entrepreneurship, and we subsidize non-work and unemployment and welfare and debt and spending and consumption and leisure and idleness and mediocrity. We're getting much more of the latter than of the former.
But the House Ways and Means Committee went ahead and approved the Democratic tax cut package, which calls for only a two-year cut. White House Chief of Staff James Baker explained why they won't give up the battle for the Reagan plan.
He thinks that third year is important because there is going to be a continuing battle to reduce federal spending and keeps federal spending down. And if those dollars are going back to the American people in the form of a tax cut in that third year, they will not be available for the Congress to put into additional spending programs.
The full Senate voted this week to approve the president's three-year tax plan, but they added one provision the administration doesn't like. The Senate would index tax brackets to inflation, which would stop your tax rate from going up when your income was just trying to stay even. Democrats have charged that the administration's plan cuts taxes for the rich at the expense of middle and lower income earners. Office of Management and Budget Director David Stockman warned of the dangers in that approach to the tax cut debate.
If we allow this tax debate to break down into some kind of class conflict between the rich and the poor, or some arbitrary dividing line between where people are entitled to tax relief and where they're not, we'll be making a grave mistake. We have had that for a decade. This kind of tax redistribution, and it hasn't worked. What we need now is tax reduction for everybody in order to get our economy growing and to restore incentives.
But Democratic Representative Henry Gonzalez had a warning of his own about the president's program.
Reaganomics takes its form and principles from the policies of Margaret Thatcher and her Toryism, What we're seeing in Great Britain today may as well be a foretaste of what can happen in our own country when the price of Reaganomics starts taking its toll.
In Great Britain this week, there were more riots, although they were not as serious as many of those the week before. Leicester was one of the towns hit by several nights of violence, and Police Inspector Roger Knight says their trouble seemed typical of that across the country. He says the motive seems to be one of criminal hooliganism among mixed groups of young people.
They've obviously come more prepared to do battle, having armed themselves with implements from nearby building sites, such as bricks and stones and building materials, and also obviously having made things like the petrol bombs which we've had thrown at us.
Northern Ireland was also the scene of rioting this week. Supporters of the IRA hunger strikers took to the streets and attacked security forces after a sixth hunger striker died in the Mays prison. Martin Herson was in the 46th day of his hunger strike when he died. He was buried Wednesday. Friday, one British soldier was killed in an IRA ambush near the border with the Republic of Ireland. The level of violence increased in the Middle East. Israeli planes attacked Lebanon Sunday and destroyed, according to Israeli officials, arms, ammunition, and anti-aircraft batteries belonging to the PLO. Tuesday, the Israeli military governor of part of the Sinai was killed in a bomb ambush. Earlier that same day, Israeli and Syrian planes fought over Lebanon, and the Israelis said one Syrian plane was downed. The Israelis had been attacking alleged Arab guerrilla bases in southern Lebanon. Wednesday, the Palestinians struck back, firing rockets at northern Israeli communities and killing and wounding several Israeli civilians. Israel struck back Friday, bombing Beirut. The Israelis said they were after some PLO headquarters buildings located in civilian areas. Israeli Deputy Defense Minister Mordecai Zipori.
When you are fighting a snake, you have to cut his head. And if his head is among civil population, it will be cut too.
The Palestinians claim more than 300 people were killed in the Israeli raid. The Reagan administration had been about to announce the release of the previously embargoed F-16 fighters bought by Israel, but after the attack on Beirut, a further delay on their shipment was announced. Deputy Defense Minister Zipori responded.
For the time being, if it is needed, we shall do without those planes. We prefer that we will end them, but Israel is strong enough to defend itself with the F-16 and without them. No embargo will force us to let our people be killed and undefended.
In Poland, the extraordinary session of the Communist Party Congress got underway this week. For the first time in the history of an Eastern European communist country, decisions at the Congress were made by secret ballot, and there was more than one candidate for each party position. The Congress has already totally changed the complexion of its ruling Central Committee, eliminating extremist members on both the left and the right. The Congress also expelled former party leader Edward Gierek and six other top officials from membership, another first in Eastern Europe. Songwriter and singer Harry Chapin was killed in an auto accident this week.
It was raining hard in Frisco. I needed one more fare to make my night. A lady up ahead waved to flag me down. She got in at the light.
Chapin's songs were about extraordinary moments in ordinary lives. Mel Posner of Elektra Records remembers Chapin.
Harry was one of the most gifted writers and probably one of the hottest working artists in the industry. He had a schedule while he was on Elektra, and I think it continued until currently, where he did about 200 or 250 dates a year, and half of them were for, either the hunger campaign that he was very much involved with or for young people and things of that sort.
Earlier this year, Chapin himself discussed part of his philosophy.
I don't know if there's a prior life and an afterlife. I hope there is. I do know that we have been given an incredible gift, the gift of consciousness and a body to utilize it. And if we don't actualize our lives, if we don't articulate them not just verbally but with our actions, then we're throwing away the one true gift that we know we have.
Next, flashback. The sounds and voices of events past. 15 years ago this past week, the nation was shocked by the brutal murders of 8 student nurses in a Chicago townhouse. One Filipino nurse, Corazon Amaral, managed to save herself while the killer was slashing and strangling the others She rolled under a bed where she stayed until the killer had left. She freed herself and managed to crawl to a window ledge where she began screaming for help. The first person to arrive at the scene was a neighbor, Robert Hall.
She was screaming. Some of the things you would understand was that I'm the only one alive, all dead except me, all dead on the sampan, which we determined must be some carryover from her Filipino background.
Miss Almaral remembered seeing a tattoo on the killer's arm, though. It read, "Born to Raise Hell." That and other evidence would lead Chicago authorities 2 days later to their prime suspect.
The killer has been identified as Richard Franklin Speck, a seaman traveling also under the aliases Richard Franklin Lindbergh and Richard Benjamin Speck.
On April 15th, 1967, a jury in Peoria, Illinois, where Speck was tried, found him guilty of the murders. Speck was sentenced to die in the Illinois electric chair, but the U.S. Supreme Court would spare him from that fate. Speck instead was resentenced to serve up to 1,200 years in prison. In 1977, Speck came up before the Illinois Parole Board, but parole was denied. One board member said Speck should remain in jail as long as the eight nurses are in their graves. It was just 1 year ago this week that Ronald Reagan took a giant step toward the office he now holds. At the GOP convention in Detroit, Mr. Reagan heard a spokesman from the Montana delegation make it official.
Montana, the big sky, Reagan country, is indeed proud and pleased and thrilled to cast the vote at this time, which makes Governor Reagan the nominee of our party. 20 votes for Governor Reagan.
Later that night, nominee Reagan went before the convention to announce his choice for a running mate.
I have asked and I am recommending to this convention that tomorrow, when the session reconvenes, that George Bush be nominated.
And the rest is history, as the saying goes. It would not be until Ronald Reagan's inauguration as president that Iran would actually free all the remaining U.S. hostages. But that same week that Mr. Reagan was being nominated in Detroit, one of the U.S. hostages, Richard Queen, was allowed to leave after contracting what turned out to be a mild case of multiple sclerosis. In Zurich, Queen had an emotional reunion with his parents. His mother, Mrs. Jean Queen, found no bitterness in her son.
Yes, no harsh feeling to us, although there were some tremendous, incredible, and unbelievable hard moments. And yet, out of him, he had grown to love and not to have any hardship.
And Harold Queen noted that Freedom seemed to be agreeing with his son.
We saw him last night, and obviously we saw him early this morning, and the improvement is just tremendous. It's almost an hour-by-hour improvement.
It all seems so long ago now, but it was just over a year ago that Richard Queen came home from Tehran, and just 6 months later, that all 52 of them would be home for good. And those are the people and the stories that made world news this week. World News This Week was written and produced by Penny C. Dixon, directed by Aaron Pilchick, engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and John Partika. Flashback researched by Bob Benenson. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.